Today is Transfiguration Sunday, and I'd like very much to share with you the text from the Gospel of Matthew. We have in Matthew's version a version that's very similar to the others. There are some significant differences, and I wish we had time to kind of go through all three of them and compare those. That would be a Bible study thing. Maybe we can do that sometime, but today I'd like for us to focus on Matthew's version. It's in 17, verses 1 through 9. Matthew 17, verses 1 through 9. I'd like to share this text. Some of the other writers put this earlier in the story as though it's part of the beginning or the foundational part of Jesus' ministry. It certainly is foundational. Matthew puts it farther along in the story. But here's what happens. Listen to these words for the word of the Lord. Six days later, Jesus took Peter and James and John, his brother, and brought them to the top of a very high mountain. Jesus was transformed in front of them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with Jesus. And Peter reacted to all of this by saying to Jesus, "Lord, it's good that we are here. If you want, I'll make three shrines or tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." And while he was still speaking, look, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And a voice from the cloud said, "This is my Son, whom I dearly love. I am very pleased with him. Listen to him." And hearing this, the disciples fell on their faces, filled with awe. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said. "Don't be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except only Jesus. And as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus commanded them, "Don't tell anybody about the vision until the Son of Man is raised from the dead." This, brothers and sisters, is the word of the Lord. Jesus often encouraged the disciples to stay with him. Stay is a word that can be used in a variety of ways. Stay put, my dad would say. You boys sit down over there and stay put. Or if you remember the Emmaus story from Luke and the right at the junction point between Luke and Acts, the disciples were walking along on the road. They were talking to this stranger, and they didn't realize it was Jesus until they got to the next village, and they encouraged the stranger to stay with them. They sat down at a table and found out that it was the Lord. They found out when Jesus broke the bread, and their eyes were opened as the bread was opened. And they begged him, "Stay with us." That's another way of talking about staying. Stay with us. Stay with us. And as soon as they said that, Jesus' presence was made ever more real for them in the breaking of the bread, and then his physical presence vanished. So even though he didn't stay with them physically, he stayed with them spiritually. In this story that we share today, we call it the Transfiguration story, where Jesus' face was transfigured and made bright, shone like the sun. The disciples wanted to stay. Peter said, "Let's just build some tents. I mean, we don't even have to have a tent. The disciples here and me, we can just make three tents for y'all, for Jesus and for Moses and Elijah." Why three? Why Moses and Elijah? That was a validation of Jesus' ministry. Jesus here is present with them. But Moses and Elijah are both ancient, even by the time of Jesus. Moses, the great one of all the prophets. Sorry, the great lawgiver. That's better. Moses was the giver of the law because he was the one who took the Ten Commandments and passed it on to the people. And Elijah was the great prophet, the greatest of all the prophets. And so Jesus' ministry here is being validated from heaven itself by these two saints who have gone before and who were so powerfully remembered in the life and history of the people. Moses, the lawgiver, and Elijah, the prophet. Now Jesus, the Son of God, the very essence of God, come in human form, as is evidenced in the glowing of His face among the disciples on this day. We celebrate this Sunday every year. I really look forward to it. And one of the reasons I do is because when we were at Lakeway in Pottsboro for 11 and a half years, we had a tradition that was there. I inherited it. I didn't like it so much at first, but I grew to love it. We had a tradition of celebrating Mardi Gras Sunday. Now, that's when we talk about the beginning of Lent. That's when we talk about Ash Wednesday, and we look at the day of Transfiguration as a beginning of that time. It is a day of honoring Jesus and recognizing His bridging life between earth and heaven, His commonness. You know, some people often say we have one foot in heaven and one foot on earth. Well, Jesus had both feet in both places, because we say, and it's a puzzle to some people, we say in Christian theology that Jesus was fully human and fully divine. Some people misunderstand that and think that Jesus had a foot in both worlds. He was half human, half divine. No. The great creeds of the church, the Orthodox Church, and all the way back to the Apostles' Creed in the earliest centuries of the church teach us that Jesus is fully human and fully divine. And so we have a unique character in Jesus. We have a unique personality. We have a person who can be on the mountaintop with the disciples in what they think is a common day, and suddenly His face glows and the voice from heaven speaks to Him or about Him, depending on which of the Gospels you read. Some places the voice says, "You are my beloved Son." That's in the baptism story. But in other places it says, "This is my beloved Son," as though it's an announcement to the world. Mardi Gras or this season of Lent that we celebrate is a time to prepare for the cross. It's a time to prepare for a new way to understand Jesus' presence. We want to be a blessing to others. And so therefore, we have to accept the blessing that Christ offers to us. And in this passage of Jesus and the disciples at the table together, we have this precious moment, this precious moment of a new awareness. You know, not at the table, but on the mountaintop in this story. And Peter would have it that they make a table there, and that they gather food, and that they have meals together, and that they live in the tents and stay there because this is such a grand place. And we cannot do that. We think that we can just park there and stay, and that would be the furthest thing from what Jesus would call us to do, because that would be, it's one thing to go on a retreat and be inspired and live in a holy moment for a weekend, but if we decide we want to stay in that environment, we don't ever get back and get our feet back on the ground and begin to do the work. And as Jesus is saying to his disciples, you can't stay here. You can't. You've got to get back to the valley. You can't stay on the mountain. You can't stay. Well, there is that Emmaus story after Easter. It's one of the post, we call the precious post-resurrection appearances of Jesus. And it's where Jesus appears on a roadway toward a village, walking with two disciples, one named Cleopas and the other one unnamed in the scriptures. I've often thought that was a good excuse to put my own name in that little blank. Maybe your name there. But they talk with Jesus. They don't even know it's him. They don't recognize him. And they're inspired. They're so moved by the things that this person has to say that they invite him to stay with them. To stay. And as they sit down at a table and break bread together, Jesus does the breaking of the bread. And in that, he appears to them and they know him. What a story. Jesus, come and stay with us and reveal yourself to us. In this event, God gives the future church, that's you and me, a landmark to aim at. It gives us a signpost to watch for, a fence post to plow toward. If you saw the video this week to prepare you for today, it's about having a goal and moving toward it consistently. It's about, if we're going to follow Jesus, let's follow him all the way and let's watch him so that we know how to follow him and where he's going. It gives us a landmark. It gives us an anchor point, a place to be secure when sometimes life is confusing and we don't really know what direction we should take. If we keep our eyes on Jesus, the risen one, in our video this week, our preview video, which if you're not catching those, I wish you would on Facebook or Twitter or one of the other social medias. I believe they're being posted on Instagram as well. It's a preview of our sermon each Sunday. And I'd like for you to see them, but mainly I'd like for you, if you do anything like that, I'd like for you to be one of the ones that shares them with your friends. And let's spread the word. Let's build. Let's invite. Let's gather people. It's this week I talked about my father plowing in the garden. They're just 1 minute long. You don't have to spend much time with them. I talked about my father plowing in the garden, and he said, if you want to plow a straight line, you have to pick a goal down at the far end of the field, a tree or a fence post, and you have to keep your eyes on the goal. Because if you plow looking at the ground, you're going to wobble all around. If you plow looking over your shoulder, you're going to end up plowing in a circle. We have to have a reason. We have to have a goal. If it's not a fence post at the far end of the row in the garden, perhaps it can be a moment of spending time with Jesus, this transfigured Lord who is authenticated and authorized even more because of Moses and Elijah's presence. Jesus probably would rather have been alone up there on that mountain. He may not have minded that Peter, James, and John, the three most prominent disciples, went with him. It says he took them with him, so he invited them. But he wanted some time away, and he probably wanted them to be alone too, alone with the voice from the cloud. Alone together. Now there's a term. A balancing act. We need to be together, and we need space to be alone in all of our relationships. And sometimes it's in those alone moments that we find ourselves the most needy and the most desperate to be filled with what God has to offer us. We also have to get ourselves quiet enough, quieted enough. And I'm speaking to myself here. We have to be able to quiet ourselves and back down or dial down the intensity a little bit to find some quiet and quiet enough to hear and recognize God, this voice from the cloud. And to be able to hear that voice without being terrified of it. Terrified? Well, we'd be in good company because Peter, James, and John were Jesus' closest friends. They were the first disciples called. They were with Jesus daily, face to face. But they heard the voice on the mountain of transfiguration and they hit the ground. The voice and the cloud at the same time, both an auditory and a visual impression of God's presence, hearing and seeing. It was up at high altitude too, and sometimes you don't think you're best at high altitude. They had climbed up a mountain, a high one, the text says, and then lightheaded, they see the bright cloud. Now, I've said that several times, but I want you to notice the striking contrast there between brightness and cloud. Because generally we think of a cloud as something that blocks the sun, blocks the light. When we have a cloudy day, it's sometimes said to be dark and dreary, and we don't really feel like the sun is even shining. It's up there behind somewhere. And here we have in this text, on the day that God's presence is made hugely real, we have this voice coming from heaven in a cloud that is called bright, a bright cloud. It must have been ominous, a cloud that glowed. It must have been dramatic and maybe even terrifying. And if that's not enough, then the voice comes from the cloud, out of the cloud, that dark and terrifying, and it speaks of Jesus. "This is my son," the voice says. "Listen to him." And trembling, the disciples look up to Jesus' face, which is shining, and they see not just Jesus, but the great prophets as well. Moses, Elijah, the bright but shadowing cloud, and then the voice. And the disciples bowed. No, they were terrified. They bowed, not just in humility, but they bowed with their faces to the ground. On the ground, they couldn't stand the reality of what was happening. They couldn't stand it, and they couldn't understand it. And Jesus came over to them and touched them. And he said to them, "Get up." Now those words are very familiar. Very often the healing stories have the same language. These disciples needed healing too. From their fear, from their doubt, from their terror at the moment, Jesus often approached people who needed healing. Some who couldn't speak, some who couldn't hear, some who couldn't walk. And he would go over to them and touch them. and say, get up. Time after time, we read those words. And here, these disciples needed healing from the inside out. They weren't crippled. They were terrified. And Jesus came over and touched them, recognizing their need. And he said to them, get up. Don't be afraid. His voice, his call, don't be afraid. Can you hear that call? Do you need to hear that call? All of us do. Our world is marked with terror these days and marked with directions we don't understand and with fear and disappointments and distrust. Yes, we need that voice to call us to His presence and say, don't be afraid, follow me. So they followed Jesus to the mountain that day, and now they get up and they follow Him back down the mountain. That may be the most important part. I'm afraid a large segment of the church today is coming together for worship to get high on the mountaintop, and they leave you there, and the whole rest of the week is a disappointment. I'm afraid that popular Christian thinking says that we should stay on the mountaintop, that we should be there all the time. That's not a bad motive. The disciples had the same motive. Peter said, let's build some cabins here and stay. But you can't stay. Peter didn't know that, but Jesus knew that. And so they followed Jesus back down the mountain. They needed a landmark. They needed something to aim toward, something to plow toward. And Jesus gave them that in this transfiguration moment. They followed Him, and now they too had something to share. They had to wait until the time was right to share it, and so do we. But think about it. How much the world needs Jesus, His power, His grace, His call to do something holy for another, not something harmful for another. Jesus' presence leading them back down the mountain to the field where the work needed to be done, where they could continue their plowing and planting. We need to keep plowing and planting, but aim straight for Jesus, whose face shines like the sun and shows us the course that we should take. This Jesus came down from that mountain with them. Some leaders might have sent them back down to do the work and stayed there on the mountaintop, but not Jesus. He came back down. He led them down the way and continued to stay with them and teach them. Their job was to listen to Him and to wait for Him, to wait for His rising, and eventually to rise with Him and then point the way.